Hello, I'm Mike Rosa, a senior policy advisor at the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and today I'm speaking with Chief Sean Wendt of the Oakland, California Police Department as part of BJA's Body Worn Camera podcast series. Chief Sean Wendt joined the Oakland Police Department in 1994. During his career, he has worked in a multitude of assignments, including the Patrol Division, Criminal Investigations Division, Special Operations Division, Internal Affairs Division, and the Office of Inspector General. In May of 2013, he was appointed as interim police chief. And on May 14th, 2014, he was appointed as the chief of police for the Oakland Police Department. Chief Wendt has attended the Senior Management Institute for Police and the FBI National Executive Institute. He holds a bachelor's degree in criminal justice administration from California State University at East Bay and a master's degree in criminology, law, and society from the University of California at Irvine. Chief Wendt, thank you for speaking with me today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
So to start, as an early adopter, as Oakland was, what is the most important thing other large agencies should consider as they evaluate the implementation of a BWC program in their community?
Well, I think they need to think through all aspects of it in advance so you kind of have a plan. So you need to figure out which device you want, how you want to go about storage for that, and then what kind of administrative support it's going to take to support that program. And then obviously as well, in most cases, you're going to need to get your police union involved in development of the policy prior to the kickoff of the program.
So really focus on the big picture in that sense.
Exactly, so, yes. There's a lot of aspects to consider, but to have a good plan before you go into it.
Great. Oakland is one of the Violence Reduction Network cities, and its partner is Richmond. They're piloting BWCs at this point, but they're a smaller agency. Did you have any particular advice you gave to Chief Magnus?
We did have some discussions about policy considerations regarding when officers are allowed to view video. It's kind of a hotly debated topic, and so we had some discussions about that. And then I certainly offered any other to share my experience with them in any way I can if they need help along their path.
Right. And I imagine it's a close proximity, so you know, there's got to be some overlapping there.
Yeah, it's a quick 10-minute drive down the freeway, so not too far away.
Right. Well, in that consideration, in those areas, obviously, where your advice will come from, could you explain how your body-worn camera policy has changed over time, maybe how the public reactions have affected the changes in your BWC policies?
That's interesting. I don't know that public reactions have really affected our policies that much in that we were, an early adopter of this, and we started down this road long before body-worn cameras really got into being the norm or being the hot topic in the industry. So, what we had kind of fixed or made modifications long before then. So, I guess some of our policy changes along the way have to do with retention, obviously, with memory being as expensive as it is. We've had to adjust our retention period. We have, along the way, looked at when officers are allowed to view video. And then also, I guess probably most of the changes we've made have really not so much been in the policy, but in the training aspect of it, what we can do, because it's not as simple as just handing them out. It is a lot more complicated than that.
All right, well, that leads right into this next question. Just, what types of lessons learned from the BWC program and officer-related events? Did you use those as learning tools for the whole department, or are there some specifics that you would point out?
Yeah, so one example that I think is pretty helpful is that, the officer has to manually turn on the camera, right? So what we found is when we first handed them out to people, particularly, your senior officers that have been operating the same way for 20-plus years, you give them something new to do, they don't exactly take to it very quickly because it's a muscle memory issue. So, like, for example, what we had to do was start incorporating the body-worn cameras into all the training that we do. So that's in the police academy and in in-service training where we do scenario-based stops and other things like that. When officers in the academy learn how to make a car stop, they're incorporating the body-worn camera into that process so that they've developed that muscle memory from early on. And additionally, regarding turning on the camera, so we found when we first implemented it that officers would turn on the camera as they walked up to a vehicle or a person that they had stopped. And that works okay for in most instances. Where it doesn't work is in instances where the person takes off running or is instantly confrontational. In those circumstances, the officer is now dealing with a more pressing situation and doesn't remember to turn on the camera. So what we've had to incorporate into the training is that you turn on a camera before you even attempt to make the stop, before you turn on the lights in the police car and get on the radio to put out the stop. The first thing you're doing is turning on the camera, and that way, regardless what happens after, it's all going to be captured on video. So that was a good learning thing. And then I guess we have used some events that have been captured on video to in adjusting our training for tactical things. As well, so we're trying to learn from it. And then I also, another project that we're actually quite proud of is our partnership with Stanford University and Dr. Eberhardt, where they are looking at a lot of footage in the aggregate, and they've developed algorithms to search for keywords or other things to help really kind of define what makes incidents go well, what makes incidents not go well, and when that is complete, we anticipate being able to roll out some good training department-wide based off of that.
That's great. So could you go a little bit further into the Stanford University collaboration? How is it set up, and how many officers are being worked? Is it more just a data review?
So it's largely a data review. I mean, we do have some support staff that have helped or helping them in this process, but we gave them access to, I believe it's a couple months worth of all of our body camera footage. And so, you know, they're going through all of that footage and characterizing incidents, basically saying they went well, didn't go well, whatever, and then looking for commonalities in those various encounters. And at the end of that, they're going to develop a report that they'll give to us that should have good information in there about lessons that they've been able to learn from that aggregate data of, you know, literally thousands of stops that occurred over that period of time.
Right, and often this kind of data is soft data. It's not something that an officer captures in the report. Be reaction times and things of that sort.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, no, this is much, much more complicated than a lot of details that would not come out in reviewing police reports, certainly.
Okay. Earlier you mentioned the officers viewing the video and the agency's policy. Would you mind explaining your agency's policy on officers viewing their body-worn camera video prior to making a statement or writing a report?
Right, yeah. So I guess we actually do differ from what would be the norm here in California, and it's been a very hotly debated issue. I've actually given testimony twice before the state legislature that was considering some legislation on this. But our body-worn camera policy allows officers to view their video prior to writing a report on most low-level incidents, but it does not allow them to view footage prior to an interview after a critical incident like an officer-involved shooting or an in-custody death. In those cases, we will interview the police officer, then allow them to watch the footage, and then, if they so choose, they can provide sort of a follow-up statement about anything they want to clarify after watching the video. And so our reasoning behind that is that we really want to know what was going through the officer's mind at the time that they were involved in the critical incident, as opposed to what they've just viewed on the video. We recognize and fully expect that the officer's statement may not perfectly match the video. We know all kinds of studies about human memory and how that all works, particularly under stress, so we don't have any expectation that they're going to be a perfect match. But we allow for that. But we really do want to know what was going through the officer's mind during that critical incident. So that's why our policy is written the way it is.
So obviously you've had some of these incidents. Has that process, obviously, well, it's still your process. So I'm assuming.
Right. So after an officer involved shooting, we do interview the officers. Our criminal investigations division will do a criminal interview. That interview is remotely monitored by internal affairs staff. And then we do allow them to watch a video at the conclusion of that. In most cases, the officers have not made any follow-up statement after viewing the video. I mean, what we see is their statements are largely accurate, close to what's on the video. And in none of those cases have we found anything to indicate that there was such discrepancy to indicate the officer was untruthful or anything like that. So I think that was kind of what the big fear was that an officer would be accused of being untruthful because his statement didn't perfectly match what was on the video. But we went into this knowing that that's just not very likely that their statements are going to match.
I think really valuable advice for agencies starting into this area that have those questions being thrown at them. So let's get into that kind of area. And just if you were going to start your BWC program over from the beginning and recognizing new technologies in those other areas, based on what you've learned, though, is there anything or what would you do differently?
I definitely think that we would have worked more on the training early on so that it was a smoother rollout as far as making sure that people actually use the camera and use it appropriately. I just think that just throwing them in and saying, here they are, it was a real learning curve to get people to start using them. So I think that could have been done better. And I think that, let's see, I don't know a whole lot more than that we really would have changed. I think we're pretty happy with the device that we've chosen. So that was good. Beyond that, I don't know a whole lot we would do differently.
Yeah, I think training is a great one to always look at. And it's questions I get all the time on, do the officers actually need to be trained before they put the cameras on, or will they, is it in the field, on the field, on the job training type pieces? But lessons learned. That's why we do these podcasts. So thank you.
Absolutely. We actually in our academy give cameras. They're not an actual camera. They're like a shell plastic version of the empty camera, essentially, that we give to every trainee in the academy so that they can, begin working on it early on. It's a $2 piece of plastic that you give to somebody, but it really, really helps develop that muscle memory. And for a brand new police officer, they don't know anything different. So they just learned it from the beginning. So that's been phenomenal.
Well, on that note, are there any final tips for agencies that might be just starting their BWC programs?
The training's a big issue. Make sure you have your policy issues worked out in advance. You don't want to be sitting there after an officer-involved shooting at that time trying to determine whether or not you're going to allow officers to view video. So you want to have that worked out in advance. And additionally, a very clear set of times when you want officers to record, when to start recording, and then when they can terminate that recording as well. So you really want to vet that policy very well in advance. Otherwise, you're going to run into real problems.
Well, thank you, Chief Lent. We're grateful you could speak with us today to share your knowledge on this important topic.
Great. I'm glad I could help out.
We encourage law enforcement, justice, and public safety leaders whose agencies are interested in learning more about the implementation of body-worn camera programs to visit the Body-Worn Camera Toolkit at www.bja.gov/BWC. This toolkit offers a variety of resources that agencies can use with adoption and use for community engagement, policy development, data collection, officer training, and educational purposes. We also encourage listeners to share and promote these resources with your colleagues and staff. Lastly, all of these resources, and especially the Body-Worn Camera Toolkit, have been designed as a national resource, your resource. Please submit your ideas for new content through the BWC support link at the bottom of the homepage or email askbwc@usdoj.gov. This is Mike Rosa at the Bureau of Justice Assistance signing off. Thank you to our listeners for joining us today.